Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
What practical information can you learn from a health coach? In her book, Own Your Wellness, personal trainer Daniela Forrest offers specific useful trips you can take today to have better health no matter what your situation is. She has worked as a personal trainer and functional health coach in Silicon Valley for over 20 years. Her own struggles with osteoporosis and autoimmune disease motivate her to continue learning. Daniela Forrest, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Nancy, for having me.
You know, there are many reasons that I liked your book. And one of the reasons was I feel your credibility is enhanced by your own experience.
Yes, very much so. In fact, you know, everything I deal with just gives me more information to help my clients.
Well, do you know, in past years, I don't know, quite a few years ago, the experts, which I no longer take the word of experts anymore unless they have experience like you do, the experts said, okay, fat is bad. So that, oh, if experts say fat is bad, I'm not going to buy any butter, not even olive oil, nothing in my kitchen like that. And I was starving. And so when you say fat will not make you fat, for example, and people want to leave out fat for whatever reason, and the grocery stores are filled with low-fat items, and I think that just does not match my own experience. So how did you come about these discoveries?
Well, I mean, you know, like yourself, I was a kid when the fat-free craze really kicked into gear. And, you know, I watched our refrigerator and our cupboards be, you know, everything got replaced with fat-free versions of foods. And, you know, we all fell prey to this idea that, you know, if you had less calories overall, that we would be more fit. And yet we watched all of our friends and family start to put on more and more weight. And we were constantly hungry and suddenly we needed snacks all day long. I mean, when I was a little kid, it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That was it, you know? And now suddenly we're starving all the time. And part of the reason was instead of eating real natural food the way nature intended for us, we were replacing it with man-made food-like substances. And our bodies, our digestion, don't really understand what that is. We're not getting the same nutrient profile from these fake foods.
My guest is Daniela Forrest, and her book is Own Your Wellness, Giving You the Tools to Break Through Your Health Plateaus. And when these people were telling us, no, fat is bad for you, I began looking around and said, okay, who benefits if we cut out fat? Well, food's not going to be very, very tasty, so we better have sugar. Lots of sweetness in these products instead of fat. So I started looking and said, okay, who's behind this advice, I put in quotation marks, of not eating fat? And so now we were consuming much more sugar. So that's another thing that I think lends credibility to what you have to say, because if you're looking online and people are giving you health advice, then you say, oh, but they're selling a product.
Right. And I tread very lightly to make sure that I'm not giving advice that then just ends up in my pocket. I mean, I do use a dispensary to sell supplementation that I know is a good quality for my clients. So I, you know, that's the only place where I ever make any kind of money on this. I think it's really important that we get our nourishment first dialed in, that we eat the right foods that give our bodies what we need to thrive before we sprinkle on any kind of extras, you know, that will break the bank in the long term.
Well, I was a biology major, and after I was finished with school, I still wanted to experiment. I was my own guinea pig, and still am. Have my own sphygmomanometer. And back years ago when I became a vegetarian, I would get my blood tested regularly because people thought I was going to keel over if I didn't eat meat. And so you also recommend getting tested. So
sure.
So
regularly.
How do people go about doing that?
Well, it can be as simple as your yearly physical with your doctor, but I also empower people to ask them to go above and beyond the simple metabolic and CBC that they get from their doctor's office, because quite often they won't even test people's vitamin D levels. What is their insulin doing? You know, we need to know what are our inflammatory markers. What about our thyroid health? And sometimes you have to ask, explicitly ask, to have these things added in. But you can also do some simple things for yourself, like you said, you know, testing your blood pressure at home, tracking your steps on a daily basis, even just measuring your waist circumference can be very helpful data to inform your decisions.
Well, you know, that's one criterion I used when I selected a doctor. He listens. If I ask him, would you please test thyroid or would you please test this? And he will do that. And I really, unfortunately, he's retired now, but I really appreciated my doctor actually listened when I requested things like you were just suggesting.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I feel like most doctors really want to be able to get more and better information for their patients. But the way insurance has things set up, they only pay for certain data points. So that's why, you know, it's sometimes it's hard. You have to really kind of push to get outside the box.
Well, another bit of information that I appreciated your conveying was that when you say you get back your blood panel and it shows you a range, and it shows you what is average. And I don't want to be average. I want to know what's optimum, not just what's average.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I like blood sugar is a really good one. You're fasting glucose in the morning, you know, anything up to about 100 and they tell you you're fine. Well, but it, over 100 and you're in the pre-diabetic range. So that means if you're coming in and you're getting your fasting blood glucose at 99, and you smell a donut on your way home, you're going to already be in the pre-diabetic range. So, you know, that's a place where, you know, I would like people's fasting blood sugars to be in the 80s so that they've got that wiggle room, you know, for breakfast in the morning.
Well, speaking of breakfast in the morning, well, Daniela, isn't oatmeal, mm-hmm. that's healthy. Shouldn't I eat oatmeal, Daniela?
I had so many people reach out to me about this one. But the reality is, you know, I don't like to demonize foods, but the question is, what is the goal for the rest of the day? Okay. We want to break the fast with the most nutrient-rich foods we can that will support elevated cortisol levels, right? We need a little bit of intensity in the morning to get going. And oatmeal is not going to do it. Because if you think about what are the things that we reach for when we need comfort, we want to curl up in a ball, you know, and watch TV, it's starchy carbohydrates. Well, if we start our day off with a big bowl of carbohydrates, yeah, the fiber in there might keep you full for a little bit longer than if it was cornflakes, but you're still going to be yearning for more very soon. And not only that, the extra fiber in that big bowl of carbohydrates is actually going to keep your blood sugar elevated for a longer period of time. So, you know, I had one client of mine who's in her 60s. She's a tiny little lady, doesn't need to lose much weight. And she just made that one switch. She dropped her morning oatmeal and switched over to some yogurt with berries and some chopped nuts, I think. And she had dropped just those last few pounds that had been niggling at her. And she just couldn't believe it. She goes, I didn't do anything else different. I just changed my breakfast. It was remarkable.
My guest is Daniela Forrest, and her book is Own Your Wellness. I was chuckling because I used to get teased by a friend who said, well, you had your yogurt and nuts today? Because I think at the times when some people might reach for chips, I'm having yogurt and, for example, yesterday, yogurt and blueberries. So, like I say, I feel like I have tread the similar path that you have in your book. And a local author whose opinion I respect, one of her sayings in her books about, well, she had lost weight, and she says, eat when you're hungry until you're not. Eat when you're hungry and until you're not. And you
Amen.
say no when you're hungry, and that seems like obvious, but I think people would be
people
surprised.
Don't know.
Exactly.
People don't know when they're hungry or full. Yeah. It's just remarkable to me. And you know, I actually got some sort of negative commentary on social media about this exact topic. And, you know, people were surprised that I had said, eat until you're full. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. How was that? How was that not okay? But, you know, I'm old enough that I was raised in a time where, you know, women really shouldn't eat a big meal. You know, you shouldn't get too full. You should look, you know, a little bit more dainty with what you're choosing. Well, enough of that, you know, that just leaves you hungry all the time. And so we're, you know, you catch these ladies just picking at foods here and there. They have no idea when they're hungry, when they're full, they're just nibbling their way through the day. Enough of that, you know, let's eat a meal and then let's put it away and stop thinking about food for a few hours. You know, it's so liberating, so liberating.
Well, again, her phrase was, eat when you're hungry until you're not. And you're saying, well, take that back a step and know when you're hungry. And I think a lot of people don't even ask themselves that question. And I think a lot of what you're saying is know what questions to ask yourself. And so before you go to the refrigerator or the kitchen, am I hungry? And you want us to say, know when you're hungry. And I think a lot of times it's if people are bored, they eat for entertainment or time of day. So again, another suggestion of yours that I liked, know when you're hungry.
Yeah. And I think that if you get full, you know, like especially with the evening meal, if I see people get full, then it stops them from wanting to snack because it's more obvious to them that they're not hungry. It's just a habit, you know, that picking.
Well, nearly every page I turned, Daniela, I was saying, right on, Daniela. That's so true. Yes. For example, you say that obesity is caused by undernourishment. And I see that and I think, gosh, I think people are eating, well, not foods that nourish them, but foods that maybe have things that I consider toxic. And I think their body's retaining water to dilute these toxins they're consuming. So what advice do you have as far as obesity being caused by undernourishment?
You know, if I go back to our conversation about, you know, eating fat-free foods or low-fat foods, you know, that's a prime example of this trap that we've sort of fallen into where we think, oh, it's a fat-free food. That way, that means it's healthier for me. And what happens is we're promising our bodies, our taste buds are where they are for a reason, right? So at the beginning of digestion, you put something in your mouth and your taste buds signal to your digestive system, hey, guess what's coming our way? Prime the pumps, right? Get the digestive juices flowing. Well, if you take a sip of a Slurpee, for example, right? Hyper sweetness. Well, prehistorically, if we were having a level of sweetness even close to that, it would be maybe sugarcane or honey, right? And that's loaded with minerals and vitamins. Okay, well, now that Slurpee gets to your stomach, there's no vitamins or minerals in there. So you're basically lying to your digestive system saying, hey, I'm going to give you all this stuff, and you give it nothing. And so it's hungry for more and more and more and more, not to mention the blood sugar dysregulation that ensues from that, which, you know, compounds everything else. So it's a domino effect.
Well, you were referring to time of day, and there was a time when, again, being my own guinea pig, I was curious about body temperature. And I was surprised how it varied during the day. It was not always what we consider normal. My body temperature would vary morning, noon, evening. And you ask us to pay attention to that, for example, regarding supplements. And why should we pay attention to the time of day if we take supplements?
Oh, yeah. Well, I really wanted to give people a framework for thinking about how they're taking supplements, why they're taking them, and making sure that they're optimizing their effectiveness if they're going to spend the time and money. If you're taking, I use the example of fish oil, which, by the way, has been in the news. I just put a post up about that this morning. If you're taking fish oil on an empty stomach, well, it's not going to be very efficacious, right? Because you need a meal for it to be assimilated. So you might want to move that to the evening when you've had dinner. So there's so many little intricacies here. And then also thinking about how supplements interact with each other. You know, if you take a high dose of one supplement, it can cause a deficiency in another vitamin or mineral. So, you know, we just sort of need to take all these things into account when we're deciding what our supplement regimen is going to look like.
My guest is Daniela Forrest. She is a personal trainer, you have been, and a health coach. Her book is Own Your Wellness, Giving You the Tools to Break Through Your Health Plateaus. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Daniela Forrest, who is a functional health coach and personal trainer. I'm out of step with, I guess, the average person in a lot of ways, and one of them is I eat my main meal in the middle of the day, and that's hard because most people want to have a big dinner. And what is your advice as far as when your main meal might be?
I think that needs to be a very unique choice. I know personally, if my biggest meal of the day is in the middle of the day and I have so much work to do the rest of the afternoon, I will be much hungrier later. So I do have a substantial dinner. That said, I have it early enough that my body has 5 or 6 hours to fully digest before I'm asleep. So You just sort of have to experiment with what works for you. You know, if you're exercising later in the day, then maybe lunch can't be your biggest meal. So, you know, you just sort of figure out what works for you. But I think what's more important than what time your biggest meal of the day is when you are breaking the fast, and are you giving your body the opportunity to complete digestion and to wake up? You know, you're already fat burning, you've blown through all of your blood sugar. Are you giving your body a chance to detoxify, for autophagy, the cleaning of the cells to happen before we're bombarding ourselves with more calories and more?
Well, one yardstick for me is I get up early in the morning to do a yoga practice, and some days I feel like a feather, and some days I feel like lead. And so I ask myself, okay, what did I eat last night, or how late did I eat? And I use that information to as a guide for how I feel the next morning. I look back at what I ate or didn't eat the evening before. So you also are a personal trainer, so your book does include how important fitness is, physical activity. And so what else? Because I've been mainly talking about what we consume in the way of food.
Well, I think that every body needs to move, you know, and it doesn't matter what excites you, but I encourage the reader to do some thinking about movement practices that they've enjoyed in their lives. I mean, I've encountered a ton of people who tell me they hate exercise. Okay, well, fine. But we're all humans and we all need to move to some extent. So what are things that maybe you did as a child that you enjoyed? Can you just maybe go for a walk with your dog? I have a gentleman who is paralyzed on one side of his body. He lives in a wheelchair. And we get him pumping the one arm and pumping the one leg until he's huffing and puffing. And then we rest and we do it all over again. You know what? That's movement for him, you know? So there's really no, like, regardless of who you are and what's your circumstance. And then once you get moving, then having some strategy throughout the week, okay? maybe a couple of days I'll do a long and slow slog. Maybe once or twice a week, I'll do some interval training. Where am I going to put in resistance training so that I'm getting stronger? Where will I practice balance? I think we need to be very intentional with our movement practice throughout the week.
And I think that's where your role as a personal trainer can come in, because somebody, like you mentioned, this person who had limitations, I just sit home on my sofa because I don't know how I can exercise. And so they call you in and you say, okay, here's your plan for you. And because when change happens, people, I don't know if intimidated is the word, but you say in your book, the only constant is change.
And yeah, it's an important concept to embrace. And I'm not going to lie, it's hard for me too, you know, and as I get older and, you know, you look in the mirror and you go, wow, that's not what I used to see. it can be shocking and we can be in a little bit of denial. So I think it's important to, even if you're not ecstatic about where you are, you need to think about, well, what are my goals now? How have they evolved from my 20-year-old self? You know, I don't have the same goals I did in my 20s, nor should I. You know, I want to have clarity of thinking so that I can work optimally with my clients and guide them. I want to have energy so that I can hang out with my 13-year-old daughter and take her to the track like she wants to. You know, these goals should be evolving just as our bodies are evolving.
And you make the point that the goal is to shift your methods to help embrace the new version of yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that's, again, goes back to knowing the questions to ask, because the answers are going to change. But if I know to ask myself, for example, we mentioned, am I hungry? And then ask myself, okay, if I can't run 5 miles like I used to, well, now do I just give up exercise altogether? So I think, again, it goes back to that question of knowing the questions to ask yourself. One thing that I think helps, and I often make this suggestion to friends who feel like, well, I just don't want to exercise, but find a friend, and that helps you hold yourself accountable to what you really want. You want to exercise. And so you can serve as that kind of motivator, cheerleader, if I may use that term, for people.
Sure.
As their personal trainer or their health coach. And what other tips do you have for people who...
The main reason I wrote this book is, and obviously not everybody can afford a health coach like myself to hold their hand all week long in their activities. But I think that one of the key ways that we can find motivation, even in the hardest days, you know, the days when you don't want to work out, you don't want to eat the healthy meal, is to figure out why you're trying to reach that goal. If it's one thing to say, you know, I really want to wear smaller size jeans, I'm tired of, you know, wearing these clothes. Well, okay, that's nice. But why do you want to wear, what would being in those smaller size jeans allow you to do that you cannot today? Does it mean that you're going to avoid that diabetic diagnosis that the doctor suggested? Does it mean that you'll have more energy to hang out with your spouse or your children? You know, what does getting to that goal give you? And if you can, I encourage people to write it down on a piece of paper, post it up in their bathroom, in their kitchen, wherever it is, so that they see it and they think about it often.
And there
and it
again.
Will help them, yeah, get through those hard days.
And there again, it's asking yourself questions, coming up with the questions, even if the answer changes. My guess.
Right. It's owning your wellness, right?
Yes. I was just going to give the title of your book. The title of Daniela Forrest's book is Own Your Wellness, Giving You the Tools to Break Through Your Health Plateaus. And that plateaus, as people hit a point where you hear people, well, I lost 15 pounds and then I just can't lose any more. So how do you help people who come to you with that problem, Daniela?
Course correction is a lot of what I do in a day. And throughout the book, I give people some very unconventional, sometimes a little quirky ideas of ways that they can break out of these ruts that we get into. You know, it's so easy. We love routine and pattern. It's just what humans do. But at some point, you're going to have to break that pattern. in order to see new results. And so sometimes it just requires one small switch to start getting some momentum again in the right direction. And it takes some objectivity. So I, throughout the book, as you're reading it, I give you a bunch of information and then I give you a place to sit there and make some notes about how what you just learned might apply to your own situation.
Now, since you mentioned your book and you say throughout your book, one thing I appreciated, Daniela, and I'm not sure if this was your idea, your publisher's idea, but the graphics in your book are really helpful to the reader. If I want to go back and review some of the points you make, it's highlighted in a way, not with yellow highlighter, but mm-hmm. larger print. Was that your idea?
I really love, when I'm reading a book, I just love to have breaks for my eyes, yes. so I don't yes. fall asleep. And I just thought that was really important that, you know, we take these little nuggets and just blow them up so that it sinks in. And then the reality is, this isn't a book that I designed for people to read cover to cover. You know, skim it. That's fine. But check a look at the bold font and see what I have to say. Maybe you'll dig a little bit deeper there.
Well, for example, one thing that people might expect is photographs of you doing some of these exercises that you might expect. But this bolder print, this larger print for us to glance back through is very helpful. Another, you have a plate of fats, vegetables, meat, and sweets. And fats is not that tiny little bit that most people will expect. And I remember when the food pyramid, as a kid, I thought, that's right. That food pyramid, that's the way to eat according to the food pyramid. And maybe we should reevaluate that. And in fact, you have that circle of proportions of foods. Now, I mentioned, too, that one kind of yardstick I use for myself is how I feel the next morning when I get up to do my yoga practice. But recently, I saw a friend I hadn't seen in years, and he's in his late 70s, but his skin just glowed. His hair was shining, and I thought, man, what he's doing is working for him. And I was pleased to see in your book that you mentioned skin as an indicator of health.
So important. And you're right. You know, you meet people on the street and whether we mean to or not, and it's not that we're being judgmental. It's just how, you know, humans size each other up. You see somebody with beautiful, clear skin and your first thought is, wow, that's a healthy person. And our bodies give us all kinds of signals, whether it's, you know, our digestion or rashes or headaches or all of these things. And I go into detail about all of these potential signals that your body might be giving you that you should take a moment and listen to and try to figure out why it's telling you something's wrong. Something's wrong. Help me.
The word that came to mind to me was glowing. He just, his skin just seemed to glow. And of course, I think hair goes along with that. I see women in particular, it seems like they've just tortured their hair, and I just feel bad. And yet I have a friend whose hair just glistens. She's older, but her hair just shines with health. That to me is an indication. So I was glad that you mentioned that people might look in the mirror. And in fact, I saw a physician friend of mine that I hadn't seen in actually 10 years. He was in a high stress position at the hospital, and he gave all that up, went out on a vision quest. And when I saw him 10 years later, he looked 10 years younger. I mean, his skin glowed, wow. His hair did, and his whole demeanor had changed. So what other suggestions do you have for people who that you would make as a functional? By the way, functional health coach? How is that different from a regular health coach?
Sure. Well, I mean, I do use them somewhat interchangeably, but the functional piece of that is when we figure out what's wrong, like that there is something wrong, it's not about putting a Band-Aid on it. It's not about taking another pill. It's let's figure out why. I spend a lot of my time working with my clients to peel back these layers of the onion and figure out where did this problem originally start? why is it that you don't feel well? Let's connect some dots for you. And connecting those dots, putting together these puzzle pieces that are my clients is, I just get so excited about it. I do it all day long. And I was really ecstatic when I figured out sort of the framework for this book so that I could help the average person start to connect dots for themselves.
Well, do you know, part of that, you people say, well, listen to your body. But I feel that a lot of times the body is whispering to the person, you know, you need to take a look at this. You know, but people are, it seems to me, stressed, and they push themselves, and they're not listening to that little whisper that their voice is trying to communicate, and they don't pay attention until the body is having to scream at them in pain or some other way. So how do you encourage people to listen to that whisper when your body is telling you something?
Yeah, and that's why I go into such detail about all these tiny little things that could be signals that people haven't really perceived. You know, I mean, if you're driving your car and you have a red light pop up, you don't just ignore it and hope that it goes away, you know, which is what we do with our bodies. You know, you take it to the mechanic. So, I think that we also normalize these aches, pains, discomforts, issues, you know, and just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about when you're driving, say, when I come to a stoplight, I sometimes check my shoulders, particularly if traffic is heavy. And, oh, my shoulders are creeping up toward my ears because I'm tensing my shoulders and my neck. And so I often encourage people to check, well, where do you hold tension in your jaw? And maybe have little clues, like with your phone rings, or you come to a stoplight and check, oh, am I tensing those muscles?
Yeah, there's so many things to pay attention to, and there's so many people who don't listen to any of it. So yeah. I encourage the reader just to start with one or two things that seem obvious to them.
Yes.
And you have to start somewhere. And you also don't want to do too many things at once, you know, just move one piece.
Yeah.
Just move one piece and see where that gets you. And then if that doesn't work, then you just undo it and try something else. Instead of, you know, especially with the high level clients that I have, they're so smart and they have all the tools and they like all the gadgets and the tips and tricks, and they're doing 20 new things at once. Well,
yeah,
we don't know which of those are working or not.
Remind people that you are a personal trainer and functional health coach in Silicon Valley. You've been doing that for over 20 years. And so the people that come to you are not dummies, I'm assuming.
Oh, sure, absolutely. But sometimes they know too much for their own good. It's the reality, you know, like they've got all of the testing done. They've got all of the, you know, self-quantification devices. They've got all the supplements and, you know, a whole team of trainers and this and that. Well, great. But they forget to sleep at night. They forget to turn off Netflix, you know, like eat their vegetables, you know. I mean, a lot of time I'm really just pulling it back to brass tacks.
Well, does it encourage people the fact that you've had health, your own experience informs how you, the suggestions you make for people? Do they find that helpful that, oh, you mean you had physical problems, Daniela?
Sure. Yeah, and it's certainly humanizing. And, you know, and it never ends, you know. I mean, right now I'm in perimenopause. I'm on hormone replacement. I have, you know, what you mentioned, my autoimmune condition. I've got Raynaud's phenomenon that flares up all the time. But I have developed, as I've gotten older, chilblains, which are little ulcers that result from those Raynaud's flare-ups. And, you know, those take months and months to heal. So I'm walking around with these gnarled fingers and, you know, I try to make all the right choices, and I try to do things to move my health forward. But those things, as challenging or frustrating as they are, force me to constantly make changes and make corrections. Obviously there was something working that's not anymore. So, it's definitely relatable to a lot of people.
My guest is Daniela Forrest. Her book is Own Your Wellness, Giving You the Tools to Break Through Your Health Plateaus. So you've had your own challenges to cope with, to overcome. And when a client comes to you, what do they expect you to be able to do for them, Daniela?
You know, most people who reach out to me have, unfortunately, they've been dealing with various health issues that they're no longer getting any guidance from, you know, standard medical procedures. So, in fact, I got a phone call yesterday from someone who had had, you know, a slew of dental work done over the last couple of years and various antibiotic treatments, and her health just started to spiral downward. And there's really no alternative. That, you know, she goes to the doctor. The doctor says, everything looks fine to me. Well, you know, she said that to me on the phone, and I thought, oh, well, I'm pretty sure all of those antibiotic courses have left your gut just in horrible dysbiosis, which can then set off other immune triggers, can cause inflammation. I mean, there's like this whole cascade of events that can come from that. And if you don't take the steps to walk that backwards and get your gut working healthy again, well, your entire immune system is going to be compromised. Of course, you're not going to be thinking well or feeling well. So yeah, usually people have gone through the gauntlet, so to speak, before they end up on my website, unfortunately. And I hope that now I've given them a little bit more of a tool with this book to get the ball rolling for themselves and to make some changes today.
And you don't discount supplements. I mentioned that you're not trying to sell people a product, but you feel that supplements are a part of a wellness plan. Is that correct?
They are, although it is the last meaty chapter I put in there, because I really, really encourage people to work on dialing in food and movement and doing some testing to see what's at the root of their issues before they sprinkle on supplements. And then when they do, to do so strategically, to make sure that what they're reaching for is of a good quality, that they're putting it in one at a time, and making sure that their body is reacting well to it before they layer in the next supplement. And then to occasionally reevaluate whether that's even working for them anymore and if they still need to be using it. So I line up a good framework for them to analyze that. And I can't go into every supplement option out there, but I go into detail about a lot of vitamins and minerals. And then they can use that same framework in ascertaining what to take for pretty much anything out there.
Well, again, I'm a real fan of your book, and I think people, even if they know some of these things that you mentioned, I think it would be nice to have this book to, like you say, you don't have to read it from page one to the end, but just to open it up and say, oh, golly, I forgot about that. And so thank you, Daniela, for writing this book.
Oh, thank you.
My guest has been Daniela Forrest, and her book is Own Your Wellness, giving you the tools to break through your health plateaus. After a break, I'll be talking to Chico State grad Terry Richardson about his latest book. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Terry Richardson returned to college as a non-traditional student. He earned a bachelor's degree in liberal studies and a master's in social science, and just completed a degree in English, creative writing. Terry Richardson writes under the name T.J. Richardson, and most of his writing is about his experiences after returning to college. The title of his latest book is Savoir Faire. Welcome, Terry Richardson.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, the title of your book, Savoir Faire, how did you choose that title?
Well, I know you used to live in France, so. No, I was at a concert, actually, and a guy named his song that. And I started doing research on what it meant. It means able to cope with different things. The best one I like is likes all flavored kind of food. You probably know that. That's what it means, like likes all food. So I love that title.
Well, I had a friend who, it was many years before he died, but he made a list of things that he wanted to do before he died. And one on his list was to be a mentor, to be a mentor to some younger guy. And it seems like in your journey as a non-traditional student, you've had mentors who helped you along the way, gave you advice.
Yes, a few. I've had a few mentors. I didn't know where you were going with this. I've had a few mentors, especially when I came back to school. My teachers, most of my teachers coming back to school at 52, most of them were my age. So they pushed me on. Actually, almost to go get a PhD because, but at the time the COVID happened and everything. But I mean, yeah, those were my mentors, but probably others. I can't remember what I wrote in.
Now, you just mentioned you went back to college at age 52.
Yes.
So that's not the traditional age of a student. So this is one of the reasons that you are a non-traditional student. You describe yourself as that way. And how are you a non-traditional student? Otherwise, because you're older.
I'm just non-traditional, period. Non-traditional could be 25 or 30 years old, just so you're returning back to school. I don't know. I got something about me that's different. But, yes, I'm a non-traditional student. I mean, yes, still are.
Until, my guest.
Yeah, go ahead.
My guest is Terry Richardson. He writes under T.J. Richardson. And his latest book is Savoir Faire. And he was a student at Chico State University, but you don't live in Chico right now. You decided to move away from Chico, Terry.
Oh, I miss it in some ways, yes. I wish they could take the people from here and move them up there.
people in Chico are very nice.
Oh, they're not so nice up there. It's like, get out of my way, you. And I'm the same way. It's just because everything is moving so fast and it's different. But it was the perfect place to retire because there's a lot more to do.
Now, you just mentioned the word retirement, and people say, what? Is he old enough to retire? Are you old enough to retire, Terry?
I just turned 63 in March, but I go by baby face anyway. They call me that in school after the Doberman game, and I hated it. That's why I grow hair on my face. So,
you have a beard mustache.
Yes, yes.
Well, you have photographs in your book, like you playing a saxophone.
So do you.
Do you remember that? Yeah, I did.
I
used to play a saxophone.
I'm not that proficient at it. I just love the way it sounds. And if you followed me, that's the reason I moved to Southern California. So much jazz to see. Some of the women are some of the better saxophone players now. And it's just, I don't know, it's a tone that you could pick up. But, I mean, one of my friends went to Berkeley, the School of Music in Berkeley. A lot of them have. And so the women are picking up the saxophone, the flute, all instruments, guitars. And just so, yeah, so it's nice to go see saxophone.
Again, my guest is T.J. Richardson, and his latest book is Savoir Faire. And your book is about your journey. And it seems to me you've had a lot of journeys.
I feel like I've had three or four lifestyles. I'm starting on the fourth. I go by T.J., and so when I moved here, instead of Terry, it was T.J. My mom used to hate that, but it was T.J. One of my baby sisters started calling me that. But T.J., I used to say, because I was coming back to school to get my master's. It started with bachelor's and associate's, but came back to get my master's. So I said I changed my game, so I changed my name. So I've changed my game over again. What I mean is just remaking myself, and the book talks about that. I had to remake myself as a retiree because I'm just very active, and I didn't know that I would find things to do, but I'm the type of person I find plenty to do. Legal, too. It's legal.
Well, it sounds like you're a poet now. You changed your name because you changed your game.
Oh, you haven't read my poetry. Okay, go ahead.
So what are your plans? What are your hopes, your dreams for this new chapter in your life in Southern California, Terry?
Well, right now I live in Escondido, which means hidden in Spanish. So I'm in hiding right now. No, I'm a beach bum by nature. I love the beach. I want to move closer to the beach. It's cooler. My plans are writing, believe it or not. It keeps me busy along with other things. I got another book written called Charisma. That's going to be my next book. And just named it my counselor with the VA. She tells me to bring the stuff out of me. Some of the stuff you were talking about when you were interviewing somebody about bringing stuff that's in you out. And so it was just amazing how I retired. And she knows I'm a believer in God. And she said, you did this. I said, you believe I did this? You know, and so that's basically what it's about. And I never really, you know, I always talk about, you know, my belief in God, but I just test the surface. So my dad, I just lost my dad in Halloween, actually. And he was the one that I got charisma for when I'm talking about get up and go. He was, unless my mom dressed him. They were married 62 years. He wasn't really a dresser, but he's the one that taught me how to get up and go. He had energy until he, you know, got ill. But
now he was in Texas. That's where you were from.
San Antonio, Texas, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. A cowboy, too, to believe it or not. Him and my uncles and my little brother, yes.
So you don't have family, blood relatives in California, though, do you?
I had an uncle in San Francisco. That's why, hence the jacket. He had a leather one, and no telling where he got it from. He was that type of person. But he passed away right before I moved here. He had several kids, but I haven't tried to keep in touch with him in the Bay. I got a cousin here that I tried to catch up with. He's like my parents' age, but I can't find him, Union City. I had to describe him as homeless, and he got like $500,000, a little bit more home, which is nothing here. But I can't find my cousin, Billy Richardson. He got the same last name. So, yes. Yes, so.
My guest is T.J. Richardson, and he was a student at Chico State. How many years were you here at Chico State, Terry?
Only three.
Three. And meanwhile, he's been writing books. And his books are about his journey, and the back of his current book says, "This is a story of my journey from North California to Southern California and the makeover of retirement." Because you're telling us, yeah, this is a new chapter in your life. So I want to wish you well in this new adventure.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Nancy.
Thank you, Terry. I would also like to thank my first guest, health coach Daniela Forrest, whose book is Own Your Wellness. And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Undertow. Feet sunk in the sand, I thought I was sliding. The beach racing the sky, and I slipping faster than sand through an hourglass. Jerry Mahood.
Potluck. Todd's a meat fanatic. He won't touch salad greens. The Smiths are vegan folk. They forego both steak and spleen. Abby avoids all cheese. She says it gives her gas. And if Eric eats a tree nut, that bite will be his last. I offer Leah a shrimp kebab. She says politely, "No, sir." And then I am reminded, crustaceans are not kosher. Chris says garlic's off the table. Tom is gluten-free. Megan avoids all Oscar Mayer, which is quite fine with me. Amy goes against the grains. She says it's better for her system. Would you like to know the ingredients, dear? Yes, please. Go ahead and list them. Duke don't dance with pineapple juice. Nikki doesn't drink. Sam shuns all added sucrose, and the nightshades too, I think. In the end, we all sat at the table, and I guess the time was nice. We swapped stories and clinked glasses. We dined on water with no ice. Jeremy Miller.
A walk in the park. The park smelled like bird poop this morning. Its slightly sour pungency, the first to say hello. But the smell and the roar of freeway traffic from the overhead bypass slowly faded as I walked into the canopy of trees. The acrid smoke of distant wildfires now stinging my nostrils, my flesh awakening to the brisk air. Nestled in the underbrush beyond the path, bright patches of red and blue belied the encampments of our own brand of American gypsy. Yet along the path I wondered at a distant trilling, the high and graceful arching of old-growth oaks, the baby blue of cornflowers steadfast in their cheer. Then the cry of a hawk pierced the air with its fierce hunger, and the longing flowed in for what had been. Amy Gaffney.
Red. This is a poem for Taryn, my lover, my partner, my heaven. Each life we reincarnate, my soul finds its way to you. Bound for all eternity, we meet together as a single entity. Though you may be blind to your beauty and shackled to your anxiety, your chestnut eyes reveal sincerity and a will everlasting. Through each and every life, we will never be the same. Genetics and lives born of other peoples, we still remain two halves of one flame. In your next life, I will be seeking you, that other piece of my soul. And even in a different body, I will always recognize you as the other piece of one who makes me whole.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
Listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.